there, green future growers. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer, and let's get growing. Did you get your copy of the 2018 Spring Garden Journal? It's now live on Amazon for only $8.95. Since I took out January and February, it really dropped the price. It's a great place to record your garden journey, keep all your data in one place. You're going to want to remember frost dates, planting dates, seed varieties, harvest dates. And just so many of my guests have said that keeping good records have helped them be the most productive gardeners they can be. Mike and I created this journal to keep track of what you're growing, what you're eating, what you're harvesting, and just all those things together. So get your 2018 Spring Garden Journal today. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. Today it is Friday, February 23rd, 2018, and I am just so excited to introduce my guest today. Like, this is the coolest thing because on Saturday mornings at my house, we watch Joe Lampel from Growing a Greener World, and he's here to talk to us today. So welcome, Joe.
Hey, Jackie. Thank you for that really nice introduction. It's kind of fun to hear that. Thanks.
Oh my gosh. How often do I get to talk to somebody that I watch on TV? Like, this is like so incredibly exciting and just, and I love your show. Thanks. And just, it's been so fun already. So go ahead and tell listeners about yourself. Tell them about your TV show, because even though I know all about it, they might not know anything.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So Growing a Greener World is a television show I created 10 years ago after hosting two other television shows, one on DIY Network about teaching people how to grow food in their own backyard, which was an amazing show. I loved it. And, you know, it was supposed to be a one-year show and 26 episodes, and it did so well, and people were so interested in it, it turned into 3 years and 52 episodes, and we had to retire the show after that because we ran out of things to teach people how to grow. But, you know, the funny thing is about that show, it was ahead of its time. The backyard food growing movement really hadn't caught on yet. In fact, it was a few years ahead of that wave, and that's sad. So anyway, when it retired, I was picked up to host a show on PBS for 3 years, another gardening show. And that was a good one where we traveled all over the country to show public gardens and talk about, you know, that specific place. But I was sort of stirring inside that there was a message out there that wasn't being told around gardening to inspire an up-and-coming generation of future gardeners that maybe didn't have parents that gardened or any mentors that were teaching them the way. And I felt like we really needed to engage with these younger people or we were going to lose gardening almost entirely. You know, it kind of takes somebody to bring you up through the ranks for you to catch the fever and the bug. And, you know, we were having a huge shortage of gardening television shows out there because the money's just not there to fund it. And there's not a lot of advertising to support them. And so HGTV was, you know, slowly but surely getting rid of all of their gardening shows, sadly. And there weren't many on PBS. And so anyway, I said, there's an opportunity. I'm going to step away from being the just the hired head, and I'm going to create a new series. And that's how Growing a Greener World came about. And it was really to tell the stories of people and places and organizations doing really great things for the planet through organic gardening and environmental living and healthy lifestyles in a way that was engaging and inspiring and not intimidating and had a great story and a great message and a lot of how-to garden. It all mixed in, you know, in a way that was a new, fresh approach. And it was a bit of an experiment because no one that I knew of had done anything like it yet. But I felt like I had a plan that could work. And we hit the ground running and it really was successful, very successful in its first year. And it's continued to become more successful every year. So now we're in every state in the country and we are seen by probably a little over a million people each week. And it's been good. So sorry for the long-winded answer, but that's how I got into TV.
I love all of that. Oh my gosh, that is amazing. And 9 seasons. Well, I know why there's 9 seasons because I watch them and they're awesome. do you want to tell, well, so like my beginning question always starts out like, what was your first gardening experience? You know, were you when a kid, an adult? Yep. Who were you with? What'd you grow? What was your experience like?
I remember my first experience, and I came from a family of non-gardeners, so I didn't have that grandparent or that parent that taught me how to garden, but I did have a dad who was that? Well, I call him a weekend warrior. He's the guy that likes to have a nice lawn and the trim bushes and the edge driveway, you know. And I was the youngest of four boys, and most of my brothers were old enough that they weren't hanging out with me. So I'd hang out with my dad on the weekends. I'd follow him around and kind of learn what he was doing. And then one Saturday, he had finished up his yard chores for the day, and I was romping through the backyard, and I accidentally broke a branch off of one of the shrubs he had just got through pruning that day. And I didn't want to get in trouble. So I took the branch and I just shoved it into the ground. This is in Miami, Florida, where everything grows. Shoved it in the ground, covered it up with some soil, walked away a little bit frightfully, worried that, you know, I might get caught. He wouldn't have done anything. I don't know why I worried about that. But anyway, about 6 weeks later, I went by that plant and forgot about it. But I'd gone by that plant and it jogged my memory that that was the plant that I had broken the branch off of. And I looked for the broken branch and I really couldn't see it because everything looked the same in that broken branch had started to sprout new leaves and take on new growth. And I thought, what? How did that happen? You know, I wasn't expecting that. When I stuck it in, I was just trying to hide my tracks. I wasn't expecting it to re-root and grow. And that was that's what I say was my defining moment where I literally became hooked on horticulture, because I was so fascinated by what had happened there that I had to understand it. And that led me to propagating everything under the sun, growing seeds, propagating different plants. I started little mini nurseries, you know, hardly anything to speak of. But, you know, I would sell plants at like the church bazaars and the festivals. And, you know, I started my sort of my lawn care business, and one thing led to another, to another, to another, and I've never slowed down. Every day is more exciting than the last. And I was worried a little bit, not too much, but I was worried when I started doing this really full time as a professional gardening communicator, I guess, that my passion may become my prison. You know, when you do what you love to do.
I know that feeling.
Right. Well, that's what I was worried about. Thank goodness that has not been the case at all. I'm more excited every day than I was the day before, and I just get paid for it now, which is really nice. I work very hard, but I don't mind it. I don't feel like it's work either.
Right? Well, that's what they say. If you have a job that you love, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah, and I add to that by saying, you know, so you could say if you don't work anymore, you're sort of retired, but I can never probably financially afford to stop working. So I just say I'm semi-retired because I love what I do, but I don't feel like I'm working, but I need the money, so I'm semi-retired.
I hear ya. I don't know. I've been pretty blessed with this crazy life I get to live. Like, I have my struggles, but like my drive home, I was looking at the videos I took last weekend, like yesterday. I drive through Glacier National Park every single weekend. And yeah, is the road's tough. Yeah, Mike and I don't get to be together all the time, but we talk more than most people. We've spent more time, like if you count all the days we spent together, probably through our marriage, we're still probably on the plus side. You know, I get to make a difference in kids' lives. I saw aha moments. Like, it seems like in the last month, I've seen more aha moments and kids' light bulbs going off in my classroom than I have in my whole career.
Wow.
And it's just like, I don't know. I'm pretty lucky, I think. I have a good life, so. I keep losing my total train of thought. So I love that part that you said, a professional gardening communicator, because I wanted to get my degree in communications. Mm-hmm. And so that makes me feel like I'm doing the same thing. Like I'm finally, I'm doing the communication thing, even though I don't know. Anyway. What I'm dying to know is, how old were you? Because like I'm reading my kids, or I finished reading it finally, but I was reading this book that I read when I was in fourth grade, and I'm teaching fourth graders this year. And this book I read in fourth grade was about this girl who moves to Montana. And like, so then all through high school, I got Montana Magazine, you know, delivered to my house. And like, all I did was look at the pictures. The stories were too boring for me, but it changed my life. I moved to Montana. I've been here ever since. Like, ever since I read that book. I'm like, were you that young? Cause I would love to tell my kids, look, you were eight.
I was eight when that moment happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy how your life can change when you're just a kid like that?
It is. If you're open to it, you know, everything's new to you, new and fresh to you. And it can be like, you know, you're bouncing off one thing to the next. But for me, that just hooked me like nothing else had. And I was as interested as anybody else with sports. And, you know, I played Little League and, you know, all those other things for sure. But I got bit by that gardening bug and it never let go. And I'm so thankful for that. And I'm just really happy that it happened at 8.
Yeah, that's awesome. So then it basically, it sounds like you kind of learned how to garden, but when your dad was doing his lawn, was he doing it organically? Like, where did that come from?
No. So that came from, you know, that didn't even come to me until I was an adult and I had my first house. You know, we weren't, that movement, this more environmentally responsible lifestyle, I don't think has really surfaced until rather recently. But you know, 20 years ago when I had my first house and I'm out there maintaining the lawn and I'm putting down the fertilizer and the pre-emergent and all that stuff, you know, I really wasn't thinking about it. And then one day I had some, I was going out to the backyard with a fertilizer spreader full of fertilizer and I hit a root and the fertilizer spilled over. So the hopper emptied out onto the lawn there in a pile. And I was trying to get it all up. And I got as much as I could up, but you can't get every granule up. And so there was still a significant amount concentrated in one relatively small area. So the next day I came back out to that spot and the whole thing was literally like burned up, like somebody had taken a torch to it. And I looked at that and that was such a visual connection for me to realize that, oh my gosh, look at what happens when there's too much of, you know, what we would say a good thing. You know, we think fertilizer is a good thing, but when there's too much of it, look what can happen, because there is a lot of burn factor in all of that nitrogen concentrated in a small area. But anyway, it was a visual connection to me, like, wait a minute, I need to think more about that, because I'd always been in awe of nature and respectful of nature. But then I started, that sort of was the trigger that led me to start thinking about, well, what's the cause and effect of, if that's burning the grass and there's living organisms in the grass, what is it doing to them? And so one thing led to another, and I always have an insatiable thirst for knowledge that I started looking into those things and realizing that as much as we try to do as gardeners, as much as we try to do beautiful things to create nice spaces, we do a lot of not so pretty things in the process to make them so. And that's one of them. And I realized that. And I said, there's got to be a more environmentally responsible way to do this. And that's another one of those times where I kind of cold turkey changed my ways. And I haven't looked back and I haven't needed to, because I have, you know, I think the places that I garden in will rival any place I've ever seen. And I haven't touched a synthetic chemical in a couple decades, I'd say.
Awesome. Yeah. So that's just fascinating, the way you just saw the chemicals just like fall, the fertilizer fall right in that one spot and it just burned out. Because I don't know, I can kind of remember things like that. And like I just feel like my body's so sensitive to chemicals, like just even walking down the aisle uh-huh. in the store and all those chemicals there, just kind of like, I feel like I can taste it till I walk out of the store and like I'm gone for a while. And where was I, like at school recently, that we had an issue like that? I don't remember what it was exactly, but I love it then that's how you got, like, you know, thirsty for knowledge and just looking into those things in your own ways. Cause I think a lot of my listeners are like that. Like, I just think a lot of my listeners are going to feel that way. Like they just, like, it just makes sense to them. Kind of like, it sounds like it made sense to you.
Well, and I think that's why you have the listeners you have. They connect to you in that way. And I think you share that similarity. But I do think that if you are open to paying attention in your life and just looking around rather than just, you know, having blinders on and going about your business, if you're open to experiences and learning from those things, it's amazing how much information can come in if you're open to it. And I just don't know that many people are. I just think they're so caught up in the moment of what's their stress of the day that, you know, these things go by them and they don't even realize it, but there's a lot of missed opportunities there. Thankfully, I guess I'm wired a little bit differently.
Me too. That's so interesting you say that. Mm. So I've been working on this book for like years now called Polish Your Shiny Pennies. And it's going to be like, kind of like, I don't know, a business book or what kind of book it'll be, but just about doing exactly that. Like, my podcast is a shiny penny. I didn't set out to create a podcast about gardening at all. I quit teaching and thought I was going to build my children's book illustrator business. And like, I actually joined webinar on, I thought I was joining Webinar on Fire and ended up on Podcasting on Fire. And then after, I was like, well, I had the money right now. It seemed like a good investment. There was a 30-day guarantee. And I thought, well, if it's not going to work off, I'll just get my money back. And then I'm sure I'll learn something. And that was it. I've been there ever since. And it took me like 6 months or... So that was April, May, June, July, August. Yeah, 6 months till September to even like understand what the heck they were talking about most of the time in the Facebook group. And then listening to other people's podcasts and being like, and it's so cool. I was just telling somebody yesterday, like some of the people that like, you know, I can remember they were just starting. I can still remember where I was listening to them, running around the block, listening to their very first like 20 episodes. And we're still friends. I feel like we'll be friends for life. The people who all launched within that first year. And it, I don't know, it's just cool, but
It's a community. Yeah, it's a community.
So I don't know. I'm torn between like asking you about the raised beds on your show because I love them so much or telling us about something that grew well this year.
Well, I think I think a lot of people probably are sort of interested in the raised beds because when they see them, they do want to know about them and how they're made and what's in them and how did that come about. And they're not the kind of beds you see every day in every garden. So maybe that's the where, you know, every year I have growing challenges with different things, but a lot of it's driven by what Mother Nature decides to throw at me and the many curveballs that come every year. And I just adapt and try to learn from those challenges and do things that I can do within my control, but it's never going to be ultimately my control. So I just roll with the punches. So, you know, that varies from year to year, but I think the raised bed question, if you want to go there, I think maybe that may, that's more of a unique answer than maybe what most people would say. You want to do that?
Totally.
Okay. Do you want me to just run with that or do you want to set me up?
Well, it's just because for me, like, I just feel like that's the difference between success and not success. And it's also like convenience because I always have a full-time job. Like to me, those are the two key things. And like raised beds, I don't know. There's just so much to them. And if you have never used a raised bed, I think you're going to really be able to explain to people like why they're going to love them.
Yeah. Well,
is that setting you up?
Sure. No problem. First of all, a raised bed is really nice just because it gives you the opportunity to basically design your soil, create the soil that you want to grow your plants in. Many people have either soil that's doesn't drain well enough or it drains too well, you know, so you got to create that ideal environment where there's enough drainage so your plants don't drown and yet there's enough water retained in the soil so they have access to moisture. And it's hard to do that in most situations without amending the soil. Even if you don't do raised beds, there are things you need to do in your soil for most parts of the country to make it better. And that's not a bad thing. I think we should do that no matter whether we have raised beds or not. But one way to really fine tune and dial in your soil to the ideal level is to create a boundary above ground and then put that soil in it. And then you can continue to improve it. And it's not going away. You know, it's contained within those boundaries. And for me, beyond that, because here in Georgia where I live, we have very clay soil. It's not bad soil because it's got a lot of minerals in it and nutrients, but it doesn't drain very well. And it's sort of hard to plant into. As far as vegetable plants, they need much better drainage than what clay soil, native clay soil typically offers. So to get the best soil, you either have to heavily amend it, and then you've got to deal with it, you know, year in and year out, because between the rain events and the different things, it'll cause a lot of that to wash away. It's a lot of work. So raised beds allow me to contain all of that and do less work in the future. But beyond that, I love the look of a raised bed, the controlled environment, the orderly nature of a raised bed garden to me is very aesthetically appealing. And so that's one of the drivers behind creating my beds. Now, my beds are pretty stocky. To give a reference to them, they are 18 inches tall. They're 6x6 timbers, and they're stacked three high. So that's how I get the 18 inches. And then each bed is 12 feet long. The length really doesn't matter. If somebody's thinking about how long to make their raised beds, that the length has nothing to do with what they need to be. It's just a matter of how it fits into your garden design. But the width is very important. And the width for my beds is most of the beds are 4 feet and a few are 3 feet. 4 feet is as wide as I would want to go because you really can't reach into the center of the bed from either side comfortably if it's wider than 4 feet.
Right?
Yeah. So that's the layout. And there's 16 of those beds in this inside of a split rail fence. And they look really nice. So when people see the garden, they're like, wow, that's it's pretty awesome raised beds. And they're made of untreated cedar timbers. Because again, I don't want chemical treated wood, and cedar is pretty rot resistant. So those have worked out really well. But Jackie, the backstory to how those beds came about, when I was working with Fiskars as their spokesperson, they had me design community gardens between Canada and the US. We would do about 3 installations a year in different parts of the countries. And I would design the gardens, and we would show up on a weekday, and we'd start at 7:30 in the morning, and by 5 o'clock, the beds were made, installed, planted, the whole 9 yards. So there'd be 100 and 200 people out there, you know, all chipping in to make it happen, and it did. But the engineers at Fiskars had designed these raised beds that I just to die for. I would drool every time because here I am showing up to supervise and help install these raised beds that were just the most beautiful beds you'd ever seen. And I always said in my second life, or when I grow up and can afford to do this or whatever, I'm going to have these very beds in my own garden. Because the sad thing is at the end of that day, when we'd make those installations, I have to walk away from them so jealous that, you know, those people are going to get to had their gardening life in those raised beds. So anyway, when the show started for Growing a Greener World and we needed a backyard garden for the set and to demonstrate how to grow food, we needed a garden for that. And I thought, well, now's my time. It's now or never. So I need to bite the bullet or it's never going to happen. So I bit the bullet and I flew those engineers down from Wisconsin for a weekend and gave them a couple $100 and some beer and pizza money. And in a day and a half, we had installed our beds, and that was the start of it. And I'm so glad I did that.
Oh my gosh, that's fascinating. That's like so different than our situation because everything here is practically recycled. But then ours has taken 20 something years to go, yeah. And you had yours in a weekend. So Now, I guess I should probably know this from watching your show, but how much food comes out of that place? It looks huge to me.
It is huge, and a lot of food comes out of it. You know, it's hard. I don't even weigh it anymore. It's just too hard for me to keep up with it because for the most part, it is just me. Occasionally, I'll get an intern or volunteer for a couple of days a week for a few hours. But by and large, it is just me. My family doesn't even. I'm trying to get my 2 teenage daughters out there, but, you know, they're teenage daughters. So that hasn't happened yet. And my wife is busy with other things. We have a farm and animals and all of that. So, and that's fine with me. I kind of like having my garden space to myself. But because there are 16 large raised beds and they are very productive, there is a heck of a lot of food coming out of there. So I just harvest it and I give it away. We eat what we can, but you know, I certainly don't want it to go to waste. So friends and neighbors and our food pantry and restaurants locally that, you know, are trying to get some organic local produce to serve their customers, I give it to them. And so I try to avoid having any of it go to waste. But to answer your question, it's thousands of pounds. It's probably a couple thousand pounds a year.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about, so you're not even trying to sell it. You're just giving it away.
Yeah, I'm not. Right. No interest in selling it. That said, this year, as we speak, I have 3,000 seedlings, and I'm going to plant some more this weekend of various crops, mostly tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, and some greens, growing in some seed flats. So that my 18-year-old daughter, what my dream is that in another week or two, we're going to take all those seedlings that have been intensely planted in 8 seed starting trays. We're going to separate them and pot them up into 3-inch pots and then grow them out so that in April, we'll go to farmers markets and, you know, other different places and online for local community access and try to sell some of these seedlings because I'm growing varieties that you're not going to find at certainly any box stores and probably not many nurseries, but mostly all heirloom and organically grown tomatoes and all the different food crops. And I want her to have a little bit, I want her to have a business that could be very successful, honestly, and get her involved in horticulture, you know? And so this is maybe the way to do that, because she kind of likes the idea of making some money. I love the idea of doing plants and gardening to connect that. So if I can help her, I want to do that. So this is an experiment, but sorry, I got a little off sidetrack there. But so as far as the money goes, I'm not trying to do it for me, but I'd love to get it so that my daughter makes the connection between she can make money and garden at the same time.
I'm so glad you shared that. Not off topic at all. And because I'm sure there's listeners out there thinking I can make a business, because I've been telling Mike for years, what he should do is sell exactly what you're saying, because there aren't, it's hard to buy starts, and he makes growing starts super easy looking. Whereas I know if I was trying to do that, it wouldn't be as easy. Plus, we've always had a water shortage, and in the spring when he's doing that, plus it doesn't take up as much room. It's just like a, to me, that's a great business model. So I'm so excited to hear that you're trying to do it with your daughter. And if it doesn't work out for her, who knows? There might be some college kid that's going to step right in. That's, you know, but it might work for her. A lot of my guests have said, I wasn't interested in gardening at all. And I was certainly one of them. My mom couldn't get me out in the garden, but since I've had my podcast, I'm interested. And so many guests, like, they're like, now as an adult, I'm really into it because I like the food that I grow.
Yeah. And the other thing is, Jackie, if it doesn't work out for her, she loses interest in it. Well, now I've got a few thousand seedlings that honestly I'm happy to give away, because if I can get those plants into people's hands that are going to grow that out, and they're going to have an introduction to a homegrown tomato for the first time in their life, then good for me, you know, good for them, good for me that I helped make that happen. And so if that's the worst case that comes of it, that's a really good thing. I'm glad to do it.
Cool. I love all that. All right. Well, what do you want to talk about next? Do you want to tell, I want to hear what you're putting in those beds. Did you say there were 18?
16 raised beds.
16.
Yeah. And you know, tomatoes are a love hate thing for me. I love eating them. I love growing them. But then again, I don't love growing them, because here in the Southeast, where we're high in humidity and high in heat, tomato plants really are, they have so many diseases that come from the soil and just come through the air that plague gardeners here. And so for us, by the time we get that first harvest, if we're lucky, maybe around July 4th or so, our plants look terrible and they just kind of go down from there based on all the disease issues that they get. So it's hard to grow tomatoes. And if you're doing it organically, of course, you have to stay very proactive with it. So you have to try to stay ahead of the disease cycles. And that requires a ton of work. And for me, who doesn't really have that time, and I'm on the road a lot during the growing season, it's even worse. But that said, going back to the thing about I like a challenge, I like a challenge. And I'm always looking for ways to learn from experience. And then what I love to do is share what I've learned through my podcast and my television show and my writings and videos, because I want to be the guinea pig for everybody else that's coming in behind me. I've got a lot of experience now, and I have a platform that I can get the word out, but I have no problem making and sharing my mistakes, because that's how we all learn. I'm a believer that we all become better, smarter gardeners from our shared experiences, and mistakes are to me required. And what's especially required is that you share that experience of what you did and what you think you did to correct it, so we can all glean that information. So I grow a lot again, to answer your question, I love growing tomatoes, but I grow pretty much every classic summer crop that you can grow. At this point, what I'm looking for is new to me varieties. I'm not really interested in the hybrids as much as I am the heirloom varieties, just because I love the history and the story and the flavors of those. But at this point, I'm kind of always in an experimental mode to have new discoveries for me. Yeah.
Oh, I bet listeners are just loving all this and thinking about the different things that they can grow and try. So, what else besides tomatoes? So you've got tomato. And actually, I did want to ask, like, do you want to talk about like one common disease? Like, so John Lee Dumas, I don't know if you listen to him, but like his question is, so if you're an expert in tomato, like what's one thing we should know about growing tomatoes that we probably don't know?
Well, I think consistent watering is important because a lot of the times tomatoes get issues like blossom end rot that people think is a calcium related issue, and they need to add, you know, things to the soil, eggshells or things to make the blossom end rot go away. But it's really more about consistent watering, and consistent watering is oftentimes not even something you need to worry about as much if your soil is really good. And so every answer to a lot of the problems out there for me comes back to the soil, because I believe if you feed the soil will feed the plants, and the soil will do so in a way that maintains a good moisture level, because healthy soil has a decent level of moisture in it at all times because of the way the microorganisms and the humic acid absorb the moisture and hold it in place. So if people would just focus on 90% of their time working to make the soil better and feeding the soil, kind of like if we're thinking about how to make ourselves healthy, we're not going to do it with a junk food diet, you know, where it may satisfy our health cravings for a few hours, but it does nothing to prolong the long-term health of our bodies. Same thing with plants and soil. If you focus on adding compost and organic material to feed what's in the soil so the soil can feed the plants, that's the same thing. That's a whole food, healthy diet for your plants. And they're not dependent on junk that doesn't do anything to make the plants stronger and healthier. So there's a lot of things about growing tomatoes that can be mitigated problem-wise by creating healthy soil and then mulching on top of the soil with whatever you want, a couple inches of something natural to keep any soil-borne diseases in the soil so they don't splash up on the foliage. And you'll really set yourself up for some great success that maybe you've never had before if you just focus on those two things, soil health and mulch on top.
Oh, well, I was completely confused. I was thinking blossom end rot came from them like sitting on the dirt for some reason, which kind of having that mulch there does, but consistent watering, it is.
It's consistent watering that is really how you solve the problem of blossom end rot. So the calcium is making it to the plants consistently, so they have the chance to build up strong cell walls rather than just not getting that steady flow that they need to build the strength of their cells. So it's not what most people think. And so if they could just focus on trying to keep this moisture in the soil consistent, not too much, not too little, drip irrigation, soaker hoses, that's the best way to do that, because you keep the water in the soil and you do it in the most efficient way. But that goes a long way for not just the health of tomato plants, but a lot of your garden woes are solved with that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, so what else is growing in those beds besides tomatoes? Thank you so much for sharing that too. I just got to say, those are some real good golden seeds there.
Oh,
that's what I call like my value bombs or
good. Golden nuggets. Well, good. I'm glad I can give you some of those. Well, you know, I'm a year-round gardener here because we don't get that cold. This was a terrible year for us. And then we had actually single digits, which in Atlanta, Georgia, never really happens. And then we had, you know, back-to-back days and lots of days in the low 20s and high teens. And that was so unusual for a winter for us. And it really did bad things for my cool season garden, because I don't go out there with row covers or any protective covering over my plants. I like to sort of see what their tolerances are. And they're not tolerant for that cold of a weather, except for kale and spinach, which are going strong even through all of that with no intervention on my part. So, but back to summertime, we're getting into that time of year where, again, it's the classic summer crops. It's the tomatoes, it's the pepper, it's the eggplants, it's the squash, although I really don't like to grow squash because it is so prone down here to a lot of diseases, plus squash vine borer and squash beetle. They are prolific here. It's really hard to control them, especially organically. And honestly, they take up so much room in my raised beds that if I really want some organic squash, I can go down to the farmer's market and not have to deal with it. So I grow it just because by growing it, I become smarter about how to do it and how to deal with those problems so that I can share that experience with others. But personally, I'm not all that interested in it. So if I wasn't doing it to share that information, I probably wouldn't grow it at all. But My daughter has a real affection for lemon cucumbers, the round yellow ones. So I have to grow those or I get in trouble. And they're fun to grow. And they grow up on a trellis. So I like to have some verticality to my garden. As you know, I like to have it not only taste good and look good, but I like to have some, you know, aesthetic appeal in the garden as well. So pole beans and things that grow on trellises and different heights and things spilling over the sides like sweet potatoes. And, you know, it depends on my mood for that year. I might grow melons one year. Again, that's a big hog for space, for what you get, you know. And
Do they get a lot of diseases?
Yeah, down here for the most part, you can get a, you know, decent harvest before they succumb to some of those foliage diseases. But they're not as bad as the squash, I'd say. But I like to grow edamame soybean. You know, I love to grow edamame because I love to eat that. And it's so easy to grow here. So there's probably, I try to grow everything. If I haven't grown it, I'm going to put it in the garden and give it a go. And then I'm going to, at this point in my life, I don't feel the compulsion to have to grow everything. I now kind of grow more what I want to grow, yet because of my mission to help teach others, I'll grow things that I really personally don't care to eat or really want to grow at this point. But I feel like to be in the know, I grow it so that I can handle those questions as they come in. And there's no better way to do that than experiencing it yourself. And because I'm that guy that wants to know, wants to get to the bottom of every potential problem and challenge, all the more reason I need to grow it here rather than read about, you know, how to fix a problem.
Before we get to the root of things, we're going to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. Today's episode is sponsored by the Awesome Science Action Club. You can join Mrs. Beyer and learn different science action, citizen science action projects or lessons or adventures to have at home that meet the Common Core and are going to be fun. So join Mrs. Beyer's Awesome Science Action Club by simply going to awesomescienceactionclub.com.
This is Robin Kelson from the Good Seed Company. We sell heirloom seeds for common use. We offer vegetable, herb, flower seeds locally adapted for our area and all open pollinated and heirloom, a lot of them organic or ecologically farmed. We also sell seed collections to help you, to help new gardeners be successful in their growing. We sell flower collections that are good for pollinators. We sell medicinal herbs and culinary herbs, all sorts of seeds that would be of interest to new and experienced gardeners. www.goodseedco.net.
And now let's get to the root of things. So I haven't been watching the clock nearly enough. And you're probably like, I have got stuff to do. So I have like kind of like a lightning round that that's like, let's get to the root of things. And like, okay. Do you have like a least favorite activity to do in the garden? Like, is there something you got to force yourself to get out there and do?
You know, this is going to sound kind of weird. This answer will sound kind of weird, but to me it's harvesting. Sometimes there's so much out there to harvest. And then I got to figure out what to do with it if I haven't, you know, planned in advance for that. Because, you know, we're talking about a perishable thing. And so once you take it off the plant, you've got the clock is ticking for peak of freshness. And there's no better time than right off the plant. So, you know, I want to be able to know where I'm going to go take that or who's going to come get it and the work involved in getting it off the plant. So I love to grow it. The harvesting part to me isn't all that interesting. I'd rather just have somebody come and harvest what they want. Kind of a you-pick setup would be fine with me.
I totally understand that. Because it does. It comes all at the same time. And then,
yeah.
I don't know, what Mike has way more patience than I do. Like, sometimes I'll be like, really? We're going to shell all those peas tonight? But then
right. You
do have to look at it. It's only at that one time a year and you get to do it. But just sometimes it's tough. And then, yeah. What am I going to do with it? Like, it all comes on. Where am I going to get rid of it? I do like the idea that you are, I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe I think about it ahead of time and try to plan, but I don't do that enough.
I'm planning, where's it going to go? Like, and it just, it never, like, I never know when does the food pantry, when should I bring the food there if I was going to bring it there, that it's not going to spoil, like you say, because if it's not their day, I don't know what day I should write in my calendar, stuff
well,
like
can
that.
Well, can I just put a plug in for ampleharvest.org, because they're a nonprofit organization that tried to solve this, that has done a big job in solving this problem for you and me and everybody else out there that's facing what to do with that produce that they're harvesting. Basically, that excess produce that you don't want it to go bad, but you want it to go to good use. Ampleharvest.org is kind of like an online search for food pantries in your area. All you do is put in your zip code and it brings up the food pantries that have signed up that will take in that produce, because you're right, it's perishable. So they only have so many hours in a week where they can take it in and know that somebody's going to be there to receive it and that it's going to be made available to people that need it. So those neighbors in need can come get that fresh produce, because you've connected, you've found out who that food pantry is. And the way to do that, no matter where you live, is just ampleharvest.org. And then you can find the closest food pantry. I think it's just a great service that Gary Oppenheimer created several years ago and has really dedicated his life to at this point, to make sure that people don't go hungry necessarily, that are neighbors of yours that you don't even know about, when you can help solve the problem.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, cool. And you can totally give a plug like that anytime.
Yeah.
So on the flip side, what is your favorite activity to grow in the garden?
I like, you know what? I like planting and I like watching it grow. If, you know, obviously that's, it's not like you see it happening before your eyes, but if in a healthy garden, literally every day is different. And I love going out and early in the morning is my favorite time, when it's quiet, and the chickens are crowing and the birds are singing and it's just us out there with nature and the plants and observing, because there's so much that you get to see from one day to the next. And to me, that's how you really learn about, you know, how plants work, and like gutation, that just the word, when you walk out and you see the water droplets coming off the margins of your tomato leaves and it's like, what is that? How did that happen? Why is that? And that's the water pumping up from the roots through the plant. And there's so much moisture that it's pushing it out through the margins of the leaves. And that's a phenomenon that, you know, unless you take the time to understand what's going on there, you don't know what that is. But it's a good sign to me that there's enough moisture in the soil. So it's telling me my plants are hydrated and the soil is healthy with moisture. But, you know, it's those morning walks in with my cup of coffee and just, you know, taking time to sort of commune with your plants. There's so much that can be learned. So my favorite thing is everyday opportunity to spend time in the garden and just make those observational changes that take place so quickly.
Yeah, I swear sometimes it's growing before my eyes. And like in the heat of summer, like the end of July, right before August, there'll be days where it'll grow 3 inches in a day. I mean, you know, some things like corn or beets, or I don't know, there's things out there that grow really fast around here. Cause our day, like we have a shorter season, but then, you know, come June 22nd, the longest day of the year, it's light till like 11 o'clock at night. Drives me crazy.
Nice. Wow.
But they're long days. So it does grow. I don't know, out here, it does grow really fast, where you can feel like you're almost seeing them like sprout before your eyes.
I'll certainly bet.
They're different between morning and night. And for me, a lot of times if I'm gone and I come back, it's even bigger.
Wow. But I believe it. Yes.
I mean, like if I'm gone for like 3 days or something and then I come back and I haven't seen the garden in 3 days, or there can be days where I can be home and still not see the garden in 3 days in my crazy life, but that's just me. What's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
I think I've said it already. I think feed the soil and let the soil feed the plants, because of all the reasons I said already, the health of the plants, their pest and disease resistance and their vigor and their productivity, all of that to me is related to how healthy your soil is. And so we can look like superstar gardeners if we can just focus on, you know, doing what we can to make our soil healthier. And again, that comes back really to compost, whether you make it yourself, and I think everybody should, because you're doing so many things beyond just creating great soil. You're taking waste out of the waste stream and using it at home rather than sending it to the landfill or where else. Why wouldn't you want to do that? You know, if the best soil input known to man is something that you can make at home for free, why wouldn't you want to do that? And oh, by the way, it keeps it out of the landfill and reduces carbon dioxide emissions and, you know, all these other things, it just like amazes me that we all aren't doing that. And I understand why we're not. It's, you know, that's a little bit of work and some extra things on your to-do list. But advice-wise, feed the soil and let the soil feed the plants. And the best way to feed the soil is to do it with compost. And the best compost is the kind that you make at home.
I don't know, because this is my thing. I don't really feel like it's an extra thing to do, because you know what? I looked in my apartment over in Browning and there's still two bags of garbage that I took out of the garbage can because the garbage can was overflowing. So that's like probably 2 months worth of garbage for me. And they're both still laying there and they don't smell, because what's in them? Paper. Like right. Plastic or something. It's not even paper, because the paper is going in the recycling bin. Yeah. So, yeah. And the plastic's going in the tin can. Like, I have very little, like nothing stinks in there, because I don't throw anything away that's mm-hmm. actually going to rot or decompose. And
yeah.
Should I take them? But my car's been so full and with snow and winter, and I have to actually haul it home or haul it to the dump in Browning, and I'm just not, it's kind of out of town. Anyway, but I just feel like that. It drives me crazy. There's no recycling in Montana. At the green boxes, and they are like, oh, well, cost more, it'll take us. I'm like, it's just sorting to me. They're going to haul it anyway. It's 65 miles to haul the recycling to Kalispell. It's 65 miles to haul the garbage to the dump in Troy where the landfill is. So it's going to make it lighter. They still have to haul it. Like, I just don't go with the excuse that it's an extra. To say nothing of, like, I have the brownest thumb in the world, although it's turning green, but I can make compost anywhere. I bring the compost home from school because I just can't even bring myself to throw in the garbage. Like, I just feel like you do. Like, if people, it just can become an extension of your life, and it's not really, the hardest thing is at the most finding the place to do something with it. I'm a little passionate there.
Yeah, I hear that. That's good. Yes.
Oh, it drives me crazy at school. I'm just like, oh, I have to figure out how we can get, and they're getting closer. And actually I've almost got the okay if we could get it going. So
well, Jackie, it's people like you. It's people like you that are making change. You really are. I mean, you're such.
Because it's like, I'm looking at them, I'm like, do you know what my husband wanted me to spend on good dirt last year? Like $180 at the beginning of last summer, $75 at least. And meanwhile, I'm watching you throw. We have a salad bar and a fruit bar at every school. There's six schools. There's 2,000 kids in this district. But even if it's not my district, like maybe there's probably some hospital near you that's throwing their garbage. Like, I just hope my listeners are out there like thinking, where can I get compost? Who can I get to give me this for free? Because like you said, it is the key and it's so easy to make.
It is incredibly easy to make. In fact, people think, a lot of times people don't compost because they think it's too complicated, because they happen to read something online that sounds complicated, and that's too bad, because it's not. It's it happens in nature without any intervention on our part. So we can do it. So,
and it's forgiving. Like, you don't have to be perfect. You can stir it once a week, you can stir it once a month, and it's still going to come out fine. Like, to me, I mean, I know there's some times where it gets too hot and it gets kind of moldy. Mike's like, oh, you got to wash that. But for the most part, it's really easy to do. Mm-hmm. Anyway, enough about me. How about a favorite tool? What's a tool if you had to move you couldn't live without?
Well, it's so my tool is sort of consists of three parts. My favorite would be my holster on my belt, which is a dual sheath, which holds my garden knife or my soil knife, which is, you know, basically a hori hori knife. But I don't use the hori hori knife because I don't like the wooden flat handle. To me, that's not that comfortable in my hand. So I go with an option that's kind of a hard rubber rounded orange handle with that 6 or 8 inch stainless steel serrated knife.
Is it that Digit one?
It's from A.M. Leonard. It's one of their products. And there's so many ones that look almost the same. You know, they're all kind of this exact same design for the most part. But this is the one I just like. It feels really good in my hand. And then they also sell the holster, the sheath that holds the knife. But they make one that's called a dual sheath. And this is to answer your question. The dual sheath, the other part of the sheath, holds my pruners. And between my soil knife and my pruners, which I'm using one or the both all the time whenever I step outside, having them both on my hip is a huge thing for me. So if there were a fire or I could only take one thing with me that's a garden-related item, I would just grab that sheath that would have my two favorite things in it.
Okay. So if you have to go and you don't want to answer this, we can just skip over it. But I was going to ask you this way back in the beginning when you were talking about following your dad around in the landscape. Like, do you have anything to say about landscape to listener, like to me? And same thing back to the soil, like whether it's your vegetable beds or your fruit trees or anything, like the healthy soil has just been a constant theme on my show.
So give me more of a direction on the question, because I have a lot of things I could say, but just try to narrow my focus on and give me a question and let me run with it, because I could go a lot of different ways.
Well, I just think because like some people, like my brother's episode, he talked about composting and then he talked about their landscape and their shrubs and things because they don't have time to grow vegetables. Him and his wife, I mean, his schedule is just insane.
Yeah.
And just for people that aren't going to grow vegetables, maybe live in California right next to the farmer's market, but they're only interested in their yard.
Oh, gosh. Yes. I'm glad you brought that up.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes we take for granted that, you know, everybody's growing food and it's not that, I mean, it is labor intensive. It is not the easiest thing to do to have a productive vegetable garden because it is a lot of work. And for all the many people that don't care to do that, hopefully they're getting it locally from, you know, their farmer's market or someplace where it's not going 1500 or 2000 miles to get to them. So yeah, the people that have a small yard or a big yard without a food garden, all the power to them. But what I would recommend people do is think closely about what you can plant in your garden that's going to attract your native wildlife, that, you know, your beneficial insects and your birds and your pollinators, because more and more, and now I understand where you live, this isn't as much of a situation as it is in an urban environment where we're losing to urban sprawl. We're losing these habitats and these corridors that our wildlife depends on for survival, and they're losing their food sources because all the plants and the trees are being taken down. So what we can do, no matter where we live, is to repopulate some of those most important flora and fauna things that not only provide the life-giving sustenance for this wildlife, but it entertains us too. As we speak, Jackie, I'm looking out at four bird feeders that are just going nuts with birds right now. But, you know, in spite of all of the food that they're taking from these bird feeders, they're out there mostly getting seeds and sources from and insects that are coming to my garden from the plants that I have out there. So, you know, that expression, you plant it and they will come. Well, for those that just have a yard, when you're putting things in your garden, look for those native species, and it can be trees or shrubs or perennials or ground cover. But be maybe a little more conscious when you're going to do that. Don't so much just pick up the plants on the rack at the box store because they look pretty. That's probably not your best choice. That may be a tough plant for your area, but does it really serve the greater good? And does it serve the wildlife that we need? And probably the answer is no, it doesn't. So my advice would just be to maybe do a little education online and find out what are those plants in your area that you could get that serve more than one purpose of just an aesthetic addition to your landscape. You can have a productive native plant that's aesthetically pleasing as well with a little bit of homework. Unfortunately, though, the stores where you go buy most of these things don't typically carry those because those aren't the ones that are in most demand, or maybe the ones that are easiest to grow in the nursery because the nurseries are propagating them en masse. And, you know, they're going to sell to the lowest common denominator. So anyway, I'm on a soapbox there. I'm glad you asked the question, but that's, I'll stop there. And hopefully there's some information there that people can glean from.
I'm going to take that one step further with a challenge out there to the listener who's thinking they want to start some kind of gardening business and they don't know what it is. Be the person that does that knowledge for somebody, gather those native plants and start a native plant nursery for your neighbors so that to make it easier for them. And there's a great little green business for you. And I don't think we can have enough of those places. And that's something I think my listeners are interested in. And that's one of the hardest things is, where do you find those native plants? Like, where do you have access to them? You know, you go to whatever store is convenient to you because, you know, you're going to the store on Saturday, you're doing your errands or whatever. And it's hard. It's like you said, it's hard to find that place. So be the person that does the research online for your community and start one of those businesses.
And also ask your local independent garden center if they carry native plants. And if they don't, you know, say, listen, please consider carrying these plants. Because if you put them out there, I'll buy them and I'll tell my friends and neighbors to buy them, and we'll create the demand. If you'll provide the supply, we'll create the demand. And that's how you get it started. Typically stores aren't selling stuff that people aren't buying, but people aren't going to buy it if it's not there. So it's kind of that catch 22, which comes first, the chicken or the egg. But as a consumer, if we can go to those people that decide what inventory they're going to carry in their stores, then let them know that those are the things that we want. And that will start the dialogue, which hopefully leads to action. But then we have to follow up with that and support purchasing those items once they make the investment to carry them in their stores.
Awesome. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. All right. What's your favorite recipe you like to cook from stuff that comes out of your garden?
You know what? I love to cook, but I'm not all that sophisticated when it comes to recipes, but I do like to go into the garden and pick off that kale or that spinach. I love the leafy crops. And of course I love the tomatoes. They usually don't even make it inside. but I like to cook soups and stews and sautés with my greens and add those to whatever it is that we're serving, because it just complements everything so well, whether it's a standalone side dish or it's blended in a soup or a stew or, you know, gosh, but whatever it is, gosh, there's nothing more flavorful than what you just went out to your garden and harvested and brought in and ate. And I'm the guy that has the two teenage daughters who aren't the craziest about vegetables, because unless they're getting them from the garden, they're not the best tasting out there. But broccoli coming off of my garden and coming inside and being consumed a few minutes after I cut it versus the broccoli that's been sitting in the grocery store for who knows how long, grown from who knows where, it is night and day difference. And they'll be the first to tell you so. So as far as a recipe, I don't have a favorite, but I just love cooking with the stuff that comes out of my garden.
Do they eat the broccoli just fresh, like yes, not cooked, or do they like it cooked?
Both. I mean, it's that sweet. It's like candy. This broccoli that comes out of our garden is super, super sweet. And they'll eat it from my garden raw, or they won't do that otherwise. You know, there's a high cool standard here. Yeah.
I like to hear that, because like when they give the kids broccoli at school, it always comes with ranch dressing, and that drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. How about a favorite internet resource? Like, where's your favorite place to go on the net?
You know, I browse a lot, and I tend to go to the academic sites, but honestly, sometimes those are pretty dry, and I don't feel like you're getting the whole story there. I do have a favorite, and I thought about this. Margaret Roach, A Way to Garden. She's a friend, but she's such a science-based digger of information. She's a seeker like I am of the best information out there. But what she does so well from her upstate New York 2-acre property, not only is she a fabulous gardener, but she has, you know, a great podcast and a great blog. But she seeks out those experts in all the areas where we need more information. And she goes and interviews them. She has a great little PBS radio show that's also a podcast. And she does a great job. What's great about A Way to Garden and Margaret is that her background in journalism and media, working for Martha Stewart for 25 years, basically running that operation, she knows how to find the information and she knows the best sources for it. And so she's applied that to what she does now through her blog. And so you can trust that if she's written about it or talked about it or both, it's from the best people possible. And so if I need information, I'm thinking that's probably my first go-to place for finding it, because she's got the top people in all their fields linked to her site. And she's such a giver of information too. You know, she's so freely giving of that information, and she kind of is on a mission like we are to educate people in the best way possible. So there's my answer.
Awesome. I agree. I love her blog. It's like one of the first emails I always open.
Yeah.
How about a favorite reading material? Like, is there a book or a magazine you want to recommend?
Okay. Well, I'll just go off. I used to love Organic Gardening Magazine, but that's gone away. I like, Fine Gardening Magazine. I love books though. I really kind of go towards books. Organic Manifesto by Maria Rodale just kind of did a great job getting our heads around the importance of taking action at a local level and, you know, buying organic if you're not growing it, just for all the many reasons why that makes sense. Silent Spring was a book that kind of changed my life way back when, that talked about, you know, exposing the harm that chemicals can do and why we need to find a better way. I love all the books that are coming out lately. My favorite current book, or somewhat current book, is Craig LaHoulier's book, called Epic Tomatoes. It's, so if you grow tomatoes and you want to know about the history of a lot of the heirlooms out there and Craig LaHoulier's story, he lives in North Carolina, that book Epic Tomatoes is like, I love picking it up because not only the information and the way he writes it, but the way that the book is laid out and all the pictures and the stories, super fantastic. So I have a lot of favorite books, so I'm not sure that I could really put my finger on one, but I love a good gardening book. Let me just say that.
Awesome. I love all of those. I just interviewed Craig LaHoulier just a little while ago. And that book is amazing. Yeah. Is Silent Spring, I hope I don't embarrass myself. Is that Rachel Carson?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
You know, I just bought somebody wrote a children's book about her. It's awesome. I read it to my kids. I'm just going to go with my final question. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead. You can just answer it.
I think, I don't know this. It's just a hunch of mine. I think everybody has sort of this innate connection to the earth. And sooner or later they discover it. I guess maybe some people never discover it, but for me, thank God that happened at 8. But you know, you think about people that may not garden, but they find themselves in a park or in a public garden or, you know, just feeling at peace and at calm around plants or around nature. And so why not maybe take that one step further for those people that haven't gardened yet? I mean, the people that garden obviously get it and they enjoy it, but I say plant something or get a plant. You know, if it's a house plant, put it by the window, take care of it, nurture it. It's kind of it's a living thing that you have some input on its survival. And then you sort of develop that connection. But through that process, you're making observations and you're developing this, I don't know if you want to call it a relationship or not, but anyway, I think it just leads to greater things that hopefully leads to more plants and more gardening and wonder and awe and a desire to sort of spread what you know to someone else. And I believe that it is somewhat contagious and it starts with just making that first step. So if it's just planting that first seed or getting that first plant, I think we all just need to do that at some point in our life. And hopefully that's the start of greater things to come.
You know, I was going to ask you way back in the beginning, like, even though your dad didn't garden, like, did you go on nature walks? Like, where do you think that like love of nature came from?
I think I was born with it. I just think it's in my DNA. So I wish I knew where it came from, but, I think I've always had it and I've always had a respect for nature and for life. And I know that, things are so resilient, but at the same time, they can be real fragile too. And especially with our impact on nature, you know, we can either do things to promote it or we can do things to harm it. And I'd rather be one to promote it and understand it and appreciate it. But I think I was born with it.
Cool. Tell listeners how to connect with you.
Yeah, I think the best way to connect with me is through my website at joegardiner.com, because there's a contact us site or link that will, you know, give you an email that gets to me, and the Facebook group, Joe Gardiner. Just the Joe Gardiner hashtag or the Joe Gardiner handle, whatever you want to say, just spell it right. JoeGardiner. So at Joe Gardiner, hashtag Joe Gardiner, JoeGardiner.com. Any one of those ways will get to Joe Lample. That's me. But social media, website, podcast, all of those things can be found if you just did a search for Joe Gardiner. So to make it simple, that's what I would recommend people do. They can get to me that way and more ways than they probably imagine.
Awesome. The only reason I laughed is because you know how many times I've gone back and had to type that E in there because my keyword missed it.
Well, just a really quick funny side story, or not really funny, but funny. The man by the name Joe Gardiner, without the E in it, you know, GARDNER, like a lot of people want to type Gardiner. Well, his name is Joe Gardiner, and he's a CPA in Texas. And he was getting so many hits to people looking for me. We finally connected, and he now forwards his website because he has joegardiner.com, the one without the E. And I wanted to buy it or pay for it from him, but he wouldn't do it because it's his name, and I understand that. But he did the next best thing. So his website forwards to my website because he was so tired of just fielding all those redirects. And we've become friends. In fact, Delta Airlines accidentally sent him airline tickets for me that should have come to Joe Gardiner. And because we knew each other, he said, "Hey, Joe, I think these are for you." And, "Hey, I see. Oh, by the way, they happened to be those tickets were going to the town that he lived in, coincidentally." So he said, "Hey, I see through this accidental receipt of your tickets that you're coming to Austin, Texas, where I live. Why don't we get together and finally meet in person for dinner?" Which I thought was a hoot, you know, through these crazy circumstances that we formed this friendship just because people leave that E out of Gardiner and they get to him. But anyway,
more than you
wanted to know, but
no way. That's so funny. Yeah. I asked my husband, I was like, "Do you care if we change the way we spell our name to B-U-Y-E-R?" Cause I was like, I wonder how many people look me up and can't find me. And it's so funny. Cause at school this year, they called me Mrs. Breyer, and everywhere there's like all these labels that spell it B-R-E-Y-E-R. It's funny with people's names, but yeah. The E made me laugh. Cause you know how many times I've gone back and typed, had to retype that E in there, G-A-R-D-N. Yeah. It just happens by typo. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for sharing everything today. And I would love to keep chatting, but I have another interview starting in 4 minutes. I got to go.
Well, you're welcome, Jackie. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. You have a great day.
You too. See you later.
Bye. Oh my goodness. Did you get your copy of the 2018 Spring Garden Journal? It's now live on Amazon for only $8.95. Since I took out January and February, it really dropped the price. It's a great place to record your garden journey, keep all your data in one place. You're going to want to remember frost dates, planting dates, seed varieties, harvest dates. And just so many of my guests have said that keeping good records have helped them be the most productive gardeners they can be. Mike and I created this journal to keep track of what you're growing, what you're eating, what you're harvesting, and just all those things together. So get your 2018 Spring Garden Journal today. If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.